Guess what day it is?
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hello, Philadelphia. I am so happy. It's been a great day and night. What an incredible honor that you have given me. And I can't believe we just put the biggest crack in that glass ceiling yet. Thanks to you and to everyone who's fought so hard to make this possible. This is really your victory. This is really your night. And if there are any little girls out there who stayed up late to watch, let me just say, I may become the first woman president, but one of you is next. Thank you all. I can't wait to join you in Philadelphia. Thank you.
Big night. Big night. Mm. Wow. Let me tell you something. I was lucky enough to see Michael Jordan live.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Tiger Woods live. And I've seen Bill Clinton live.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know that Bill Clinton believes what he says, but nobody's better at saying it.
And no
he is unfriggin' believable at telling a story.
Right. He's an awesome storyteller.
I mean, Abe Lincoln was the last guy that went, in 1971, I met a girl.
And
it's unbelievable.
And I couldn't stop watching.
Oh, he's mesmerized.
Oh, my gosh.
Just ridiculous. I don't know that 10 minutes of Bill and Hillary's marriage has been anything close to the story he painted last
mm-hmm.
night. I even think that psychologically, maybe he wishes that that's the relationship he had.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, he's so good. He's so good at doing what he does. And again, it amazes me that he's not used more often
mm-hmm.
Because he has the ability to connect to people and convince people. Of something that is completely untrue, that he and Hillary have a wonderful marriage. Now, look, let's be fair. Maybe at this point they've evolved into a relationship as friends. He said, we still take walks and laugh together all the time. Maybe that's the evolution of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of us are in a position to judge, you know, whether he could keep his pants on and whether or not she should have stayed around or shouldn't have. But really, in the big picture in politics, it doesn't matter if what he said was true. What matters is he went up last night and delivered a speech that painted her as a human being,
mm-hmm.
painted her as a woman. How many times has she been actually? You think about Hillary Clinton over the past few years. He made her, and I'm not being trite here at all, he made her female mm-hmm. in a way that she hasn't been able to do herself.
Yeah, he completely did. The theme of the night was obviously empowering women, and it was I got chills with every speaker.
Crazy how good he is.
And a mother, too. And bringing
a mother and a grandmother.
And showing Chelsea.
That was cool, too.
And a son-in-law sitting next to Chelsea going, oh, boy, here we go.
You know, regardless of whether you're a Republican or Democrat, as I watched, I thought about my two nieces who just turned 7, and I thought, you know what? One day. They could.
Well, it was a nice touch with Hillary at the end. Yeah. Remember by satellite at the end where she said, if any little girl stayed up, you're next?
Yeah, and she's holding hands with the little girl, mm-hmm. and there were kids surrounding her. I also loved in his speech, this is why he's so good as well. He's telling the story of their life, but saying, and when I met her in Park Ridge, woo, and then Illinois goes crazy. Then when she was in Massachusetts, and he was citing little things that only each state would know about the Cubs and the Bears.
He weaved states in and out so he could work the entire room.
Yeah.
That guy's a friggin' magician.
You know, he still has the highest approval rating of any president in modern history. It was always above George Bush. It was always above Obama. I think 56% was the average. So, I mean...
He's the best.
Yeah.
I did like at the end where they showed the pictures of all the presidents over time and then it broke the glass ceiling, you know, the metaphor, of course, and she's standing there with the kids. That was so cool.
If you hate Bill Clinton, I dare you to watch the entire speech from last night and not go, oh, that guy's good. Mm-hmm. I don't like him, but he's good. Mm-hmm. I don't like him, but he's really, really good. You got a clip, Jake? Point me some.
I saw the girl again. Standing at the opposite end of that long room. Finally, she was staring back at me. So I watched her. She closed her book, put it down, and started walking toward me. She walked the whole length of the library, came up to me and said, look, if you're going to keep staring at me, and now I'm staring back, we at least ought to know each other's name. I'm Hillary Rodham. Who are you?
I was so impressed and surprised that, whether you believe it or not, momentarily I was speechless.
That's brilliant.
It's so good.
It's brilliant. It's self-deprecating. It's the great notion of a man pursuing a woman and the woman having the power in the relationship and all of that that appeals to both sides. He looks like a good guy at that point. I don't even, you know, again, I don't know if that story happened. That story could have happened. That was at the beginning. But it doesn't matter. In the big picture, it doesn't matter. He painted Hillary Clinton as a human being. Mm-hmm. And along with the other people last night, the woman who was burned over most of her body on 9/11, who told a great, very emotional story about Clinton visiting her
right.
in off hours.
And still keeping in touch with her.
Right.
In the months after, and the police detectives from 9/11,
right, the congressman as well,
yeah.
who talked about her in very well, in just really stark terms, and juxtaposed her against Donald Trump, who made $150,000 off a tax break from 9/11, mm-hmm. and not only did he not visit the pile, he made up a story about people protesting in Jersey. It doesn't change anything for me. I'm not going to vote for Hillary. I'm not going to vote for Trump. But it's like I said, he's Tiger Woods. He's mm-hmm. Michael Jordan. It's just fun watching the best.
We also have to, pay homage to the mothers of all of the shooting victims who got together. That was an incredible story to me, because it started out, they said, yeah, we thought it was just a political candidate. We thought Hillary was just going to come visit. They said, well, she only has 20-30 minutes to talk to you. And she ended up canceling everything, staying for 2 hours and saying, look, if you want to move forward, you have to unite. And they have really become the faces for, and not just, women who have been shot, people with questionable ties who have been shot and killed by police, but Sandra Bland, just regular people, just victims of gun violence, period.
Yeah, a good gun violence moment. I do think the Democrats missed it, though, because you needed to invite the police chief from Dallas. Maybe they did. Mm-hmm, maybe you mm-hmm. said no. But you needed to have some representative of Men in Blue as well, because the initial thought is, when you put four African-American moms on, that this is some cop killing black kids thing, because people don't, they don't listen to it, they don't tie to it. So that, to me, I get the power of the moment, but that moment got lost a little.
They did have, at the very start of the convention, it was yeah, so cool with yeah. all, no, they had all the women, in Congress, and they ended with one of the, there's a woman from Florida who was the first female police chief in Florida for the town. I'm forgetting what town it is or what city it is, but she was the first female police chief, and she did allude to the fact that we need to come together, law enforcement, everyone has to do a better job of communicating, and I think she did a really nice job representing the police
well,
side
the,
of that.
The bottom line is the Democrats in two nights have had a much better run than the Republicans had in Cleveland, and today you have to go there.
Yes, I will be on the ground and hopefully a couple hours.
President Obama speaks tonight. Vice President Biden speaks tonight as well. I believe Tim Kaine speaks tonight. I like him, by the way.
Mm-hmm, I do
too.
Don't
see much of him, but I like him. And tomorrow Hillary Clinton will formally do her acceptance speech, and off we go for the rest of the campaign. Eric Edelstein will be on later, and we'll talk to Edelstein about it, because he was in Philadelphia last night for Grandpa Bill. Sitting around in Philly as we all sat in front of him and heard him weave his stories. We got a lot to do on the show today. We're going to do our picks for the season's final major. Congratulations, Mary. It's the final major. We don't have to do any more sports picks on the show in our illegal gambling operation until NFL season.
Wait, this is today?
Yeah, it's today.
Oh.
Matter of fact, it's now.
What?
Yeah.
It is not.
So we're going to talk about that in just a second.
Great.
Before we get to this, though, I want to talk about the text question that sort of set up yesterday. And that's trends with kids that drive you nuts. I told you the goodie bags at the birthday parties drive you nuts. Sandberg was telling me about something that I was unaware of. What's it called?
This thing called a sleep under.
All right. I know what a sleepover is, because John DeCause is here. And John, this is how you and I met. I slept over at your house.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
A sleep under in Australia.
It's not that, though, is it?
No.
What is a sleep under?
A sleep under is where your kid gets invited to a party. You go at like 6 o'clock, and then you pack a blanket and stuff, and they act like they're going to spend the night, but you pick them up at like 10:30.
So what do they do with the pillow and the blanket?
I don't know, they like lay there and pretend they're watch a movie or something. I'm not really sure because I've not hosted a sleep under.
Isn't it called a play date?
Well, it seems like it.
But they wear their jammies and stuff.
Yeah, it's terribly inconvenient from the parents'
Mary, you know about this?
No, I read about it, actually. But you know what? I kind of think it's a good idea.
What?
Mary. Because some of these kids, okay, I've experienced this with all three of my kids.
Well, so did I. But why would you reinforce the idea that you don't have to stay? You don't have to commit? You don't have to learn how to take care of yourself.
If you're too wimpy to spend the night, you shouldn't be allowed to go.
No, some kids are insecure with spending the night. Some houses are uncomfortable for kids. Some kids have.
I never liked to spend the night. It wasn't because
Exactly. Some kids have allergy problems.
Even at 30, you're a little old for one of these. You probably shouldn't be there.
Well, my problem is I don't like to, like, you have to leave the couch. You're home. Right. Even if you go to dinner, you're not staying out till 10:30. You come home, you wash your makeup off, you put on your lounge clothes or PJs.
Preach it, girl. You're singing my song.
You have a scotch or something and some ice cream. Uh-huh. And the thing that's hanging over your head is, we got to go pick Patrick up at 10:30. And then you bring them home, and then they're wild because they've been at a party the whole night.
Well,
so they're not winding down for a good sleep.
I always told my kids, because there were a few times I had to pick them up, but I always told my kids, look, give it a try. And if you decide you can't do it or you don't want to stay, you just tell the mom and dad. And then
they call you up and you got to go get them anyway.
Yeah, but why would you make
that's too much hand-holding. My parents said, suck it up.
Yeah, well, your parents were the last parents that raised wolves. No, but I'm telling you, you give a kid an option, it's fine. But the kid then also has the option to tough it out and hang with their friends and stay over.
Here's what I want.
As opposed to, we're picking you up at 11.
Because we had that little problem.
By the way, who wants people coming to your house at 11 o'clock?
Yeah, that's too late. If these sleep unders are happening, they have
to. And they give it a cute name to make it acceptable.
It's not a cute name.
Sleep under. It's one of those cases where the opposite is not the opposite. Sleep under is not the opposite of sleep over.
I am adding this to goodie bags at birthday parties. It's clearly the end of society as we know it.
We had sleep unders as a kid, but we would just build a fort in the crawl space.
Right, and you'd sleep under the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of that was because your dad locked you out.
Well, but we had fun.
Yes,
and we stayed the whole night.
Right. You didn't wait for somebody to crawl under the house
sometimes
and pull
weeks.
You out of there. I think it's one of the worst ideas I've heard.
Sleep unders? Oh, they're horrible. And it seems, for those that haven't experienced it, it hits the fourth grade. 9-year-olds, fourth graders. This is where we're not quite big enough to do the sleepover thing, so now we're doing
when is a sleepover?
It even says it on the Evite.
So do you just skip the entire sleepover period of childhood then? Is that the deal?
Oh, no, I spent the night.
Or just call it a party and not do the pajama stuff.
Yeah, and my party ended at like 8. My parents never came and got me from a party at 10:30. You know, like, that's the part that my parents were very adamant. We aren't leaving the house. Once they're home for the night, they're not coming out again.
I don't want people in my house at 11 o'clock. By the way,
but my parents drink, so.
People wouldn't come a lot. Yeah, probably a lot, but you wouldn't want to say that on the air. And I don't want people coming over at 11 o'clock. You know what? You come over to my house at 11 o'clock, you're going to see me in my underpants. I'm telling you that right now because I'm probably wandering around like a maniac in a daze because I get up early.
What's the difference?
I open a door and I go, what?
What's the difference?
Oh, you're here to pick up Timmy. I'm sorry.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, you might see that too, though.
Yeah, that's true. But that's just when I'm wandering outside to get the mail.
Oh.
So sleep unders.
Sleep unders. All right, I don't know who started this. I'd like to know which generation started it, like which parent group.
It has to have been 10 years, right?
Bennett probably sleep undered a lot, probably.
Yeah, it's got to be Gen X.
Gen X, yeah, for sure.
I can't imagine it was. I never heard of it until you brought it up.
It's not a good thing.
Stupid. All right, trends you hate. Trends you hate in kids, stuff that kids do now that you go, what? And by the way, Pokemon Go, sleep unders, and birthday party goodie bags have already been taken.
I kind of like the goodie bags myself.
What?
I like candy, so.
Is that for you, Mary?
Well,
for the kids.
Candy. You have a car and you know, the ability
my
to
mom
do that.
Used to make them where every kid that came
you had goodie bags?
Yeah, and my mom would take a paper bag and she'd use construction paper and would make them look like each kid that attended the party.
Oh.
Like with hair and eyes. And
I thought goodie bags were like a 1990 thing, but you had them in the early 80s.
We had goodie bags.
Oh, yeah, we had
them
too.
Yeah, we had goodie bags too.
So the question really is not what kids do, it's things parents do.
Oh, yes, you're right.
That's a good point. Yeah, point of clarification. Score, Dave.
I didn't even know what a play date was. A play date when we were young, were little, is the kids from the block would come down and ring the doorbell and say, hey, can you come out and play?
It's some play date. You know what it is? Go play with your friends.
Yeah, I don't get this.
Now you have to send an Evite for those.
You're kidding.
No.
You had to send an Evite for a play
and
date?
You can't even say, text me the address. They're like, oh, I'll send you the Evite.
You know what? Okay. Thank God I'm barren and can't have children. It's 6:28. We'll come back and do the PGA picks in a little bit. And Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, running for re-election, he was on yesterday. And since we spent a lot of time talking about Democrats this week, I felt maybe you need a little Republican injection. So Rubio will be on. Andre and I spoke with him right after the show yesterday. We'll play some of that back here in a few minutes as well. And John DeCoste is here. John is working on our new musical. For those of you who haven't gotten tickets to Hamilton, the name of our new musical is Millard. It's the story of Millard Fillmore, and John will have some sneak peek excerpts of it before we open it later this fall. So it's exciting. It's 6:29. We're back with a big story in a moment. Sleep under. 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
6:42 after 7 o'clock this morning. We will give you a little more of the DNC with our friend Eric Edelstein. Actually, it's Dueling Erics. Eric Herman, former guest on the show as well, with some more Democrat perspective on what the Democrats are doing. And yes, I will mock them. Of course I will. Dean Richards after 8, Ro Khan after 8, and Anthony Ponce later on his new job.
Yeah, did you hear about that?
He left Channel 5 so he could go drive for Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he did. At 6:43, well, I mean, the good news is it's not like we're going to run out of Ponces. There's an endless supply of Ponces.
But he's doing something kind of unique with it, too, which he'll tell you about.
There are over 200 Ponces in that family alone. Giuseppe Ponce.
That could be true.
Giuseppe Ponce is over there now, along with Harpo and Zeppo. Yesterday, you and I spoke with Senator Marco Rubio right after the program. I want to play back a little bit of that for you now, including talking to Marco Rubio about his reelection campaign and how he feels about Senator Kirk here.
I think Mark's going to do great. I really do. I mean, people have to work with Mark to understand this is a guy that brings kind of an intelligent, thoughtful leadership to the. He's always putting Illinois first, not his party, which I think all people should do, obviously. He's been a big leader. You know, we've been involved in the VA cleanup stuff, and he's been a huge leader in that. And on fiscal conservatism, he's always on the right side of the issues when it comes to taxes, wasteful spending, and on national security. I mean, he's just been tremendous on all these issues with Iran and beyond. So it's just someone we need back in the U.S. Senate.
For somebody that's kind of a political junkie like me, I was fascinated by the story of you getting back into the race. But if people aren't aware, as I understand it, a personal friend of yours in the race stepped aside at one point, not because there was some deal between the two of you, but because, speaking of taking one for the team, I felt that he thought you had a better chance of holding the seat. Is that accurate?
I think that's exactly how he felt. And it wasn't because he was doing anything wrong. It was just in a year like this where so much attention is being paid to the presidential race, it's hard to cut through. And there was a real concern about it. So it won't be an easy race. I mean, Florida, as you know, is a one-point state one way or the other. And
right.
It's a tough fight, but he felt like he gave us the best chance. And I looked at it and said, look, I don't want to be the reason why Chuck Schumer becomes majority leader and we lose the Senate and all the consequences that come with that. And it was difficult in the sense that we had another idea of what we wanted to do at this point in our life, but I'm sure it was the right decision. I really am.
The slog that the Senate can be, you know, if you're a student of American history at all, it was set up as the deliberative branch doesn't mean nothing gets done. But is this also correct that was the core of your frustration, is how little was able to be accomplished because of Harry Reid's control?
When Harry Reid was the majority leader, I remember those first 4 out of the 6 years I've been there and Mark's been there, nothing happened. I mean, it wasn't just that it was slow. It was just non-existent. He literally just paralyzed the place. We took more votes the first 3 months of 2015 than we did basically 3 out of the 4 years that Harry Reid was there. And that's how bad it had gotten. And so, like the enormous majority of Americans, I'm very frustrated with the Senate. I'm very frustrated with the Congress and Washington. But giving up is not the answer. Certainly, given the stakes at play here, especially with the Supreme Court vacancies, I mean, and one already exists.
I know that you've not been shy about speaking out when you've disagreed with candidate Trump, and I'd like to find things I agree on with candidate Trump maybe once in a while, but he continues to kind of get in his own way. How concerned are you about his ability to do the job, regardless of how you feel about Hillary?
Well, my sense of it is, and obviously, look, I had an 11-month race, and everybody knows the policy and attitudinal differences I may have on issues than with Donald, but at this point, it's gotten to a choice, and it really, if there's only two people in the world that are going to be president, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, and for me, that's the choice. And I view the Senate as a place that can always act as a check and balance on whoever the next president is. I also think that there's something to be said for once you're actually in that position, once you're actually working at this thing and you're in there and you start to have access to information that perhaps you didn't have before, especially for someone who's never been in politics, I think it starts to impact your views a little bit. And that's my sense of it, is as you know, he settles into this role as the nominee and ultimately as the president, that access to these issues is going to begin to, in some ways, kind of shape some of the policy positions given reality versus perhaps what you might read about, you know, on a blog somewhere. So I think that's going to be a real factor.
How much of that, though, is hope, as in hope that he'll do the right thing versus feeling that you know him well enough to think that he will?
Well, obviously, for someone who's never been in politics, you don't have a record to kind of point to or to talk about any sorts of things. So, yeah, I mean, it's an open question in some ways. But in the other way, I would say to you that we know exactly what we're going to get with Hillary Clinton. We've seen it throughout her time in public service. It's more of the same types of policies. We know exactly what we're going to get from her. And so, to me, that's even more concerning.
Well, but you know, it's interesting, Senator, and Andre, I want to get Andre in here, but I think for the first time in my lifetime, and I'm 55, I think you're mid-40s, so I've got 10 on you. But in my lifetime, I've certainly seen cases where you go, really, 300 million people, this is the best we've got. This year, it's much darker than that, where people are going, okay, who's going to do the least damage over the next 4 years? It's not supposed to work this way. This is the choice we have. But I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the damage that both of them could do.
Well, I understand your point of view on that. And obviously, you know, a lot of people have shared it over time and regarding this campaign. The other thing I take comfort in, though, is that in this republic, it's the voters who have made this decision. We've gone out there. We've made our arguments during the primary. The voters looked at all of it. They looked at all of it over months and months and months and decided this is what they wanted. And in the end, in the republic, that's the way it goes. And so at some point, you got to be willing to say, well, look, you know, I feel a certain way about certain things, but the voters feel differently, and I have to respect that and see how that plays out. So that's where I take comfort, is that we are in the country that had an election. We had a primary. We'll have a general. We'll have one again in 2 years and another one for president in 4. And in the end, when you buy into this republic, one of the things you buy into is the belief that just because you have more degrees on the wall and have been following this for a longer period of time doesn't mean that millions of Americans who feel differently and vote so may not be the ones that are right about something. So, again, it's a very unusual year. I understand that.
Senator, will you endorse Donald Trump because you think he'll do great things for the country and be a great president, or simply because he is the party's nominee?
Well, you know, I would say two things. Number one, I would say three things. One, I signed a pledge, and I said when I signed that pledge, I did so because I believe that no matter how much I disagreed with everybody on that debate stage, any one of them would be better than Hillary Clinton. So that's number one. Number two, I honestly believe that we have a chance for him to do things that we know for sure we have no chance that Hillary Clinton will do the right thing on a number of things. And number three is I do believe that he will be in favor of fixing the tax code. Maybe not exactly the way I would want to fix it, but I believe he'd be in favor of that. I think we would have much more cooperation from him on balancing the debt than we ever will get from her. I believe he's serious about rebuilding our military. I don't believe that she is. He buys into and supports the sequester. I think he takes the risk of radical Islam seriously in a way that even last night we had a 6-hour convention, whatever it was. I don't think that the word ISIS ever came up once in that entire night. I don't know if it's possible given anything that's going on in the world. And I think we have a much better chance of, and I think he's committed to doing this, by the way, of putting someone on the Supreme Court that will actually apply it as originally intended versus the kind of nominee that I know we're going to get under Hillary Clinton. So, you know, those are the things I look at as a person who has the opportunity to be way better than anything Hillary Clinton's ever going to be.
I understand that, and we may differ on a few things, but we're not that far apart on many. I just think that when Congress decides, and I've had this argument with Leader McConnell, when Congress decides that we'll determine the timetable on when we actually vet a nominee for the Supreme Court. It's a dangerous leap to make, and I have no faith in the Democrats that they won't try to exact some revenge on that move down the road. Having said that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's possible. They've done it before, not just on Supreme Court nominees, but on others. It's quite possible. And again, I would tell you that the number, I'm not advocating that we lower the number of Supreme Court justices, but there's no magic to the number 9. I mean, that's wholly set by Congress. We could lower the Supreme Court to 5 or 7 or make it 15. I mean, that's the key is to have a Supreme Court that can function, and more importantly, a Supreme Court in which at least 5 of the justices understand that their job is not to write law. Their job is to interpret the Constitution as originally intended, whether they agree with the policy outcome or not.
It's Senator Marco Rubio, nice guy, and certainly a player going forward in the future. MarcoRubio.com is his election campaign. And, you know, again, if I talk to a guest in politics from either party and I agree with 60% of what they're saying, that's a high watermark. And I'm somewhere around 58, 59 with Rubio.
Really?
Yeah. Well, 57.5. We're tight on time here, so we got to go through this quickly. Sandberg, winner of the U.S. Open. Congratulations. Where have you put the trophy?
On my mantle.
And, of course, Andre Darlis won the Masters.
Yes.
And the British Open. Was it the British Open or the U.S. Open you won?
I won the U.S., and Kevin Powell won the Open Championship.
Right. So 3 women so far have won.
That's right.
Yeah. You, Andre, and Kevin. All right, so we'll go to the picks now.
And I got Doc Most picks, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I'll get my mother's picks later because, you know, she's very busy running numbers for the mob here in Chicago. And with football season right around the corner, she's busier than ever. All right, so let's start with, since Kevin's not here, let's start with you, Mary. Your 3 golfers you're picking.
I'm doing the law firm of Justin, Dustin, and Bubba.
Nice. Justin Thomas?
Justin Rose.
Oh, Justin Rose. Okay.
Is he playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Justin Rose,
Dustin Johnson, and Bubba.
And Bubba Smith, the deceased lineman for the Baltimore Colts.
Bubba Watson.
Oh, Bubba Watson. Okay.
Yeah.
Sandberg,
I need a score under.
Oh, that's right. The winning score will be how many under or over or even par?
Under 2. Is
all right, that so good? 2 under.
Two under.
Yeah, 2 under. Sandberg.
Sergio.
Hideki Matsui.
And Aaron Baddeley.
Wow.
Who?
He just won the Barbasol, so.
3
coming
golfers?
In hot.
I didn't see. Look at you. Look at you. Andre, and your score?
Oh, 11 under.
Well, that's a good number.
I just want to say I've let it slide that Kevin won the last one and I came in second, and he's not really an active member of the show. I'm totally over it.
By the way, letting it slide would mean not bringing
it up. Oh, right. I'm going.
Three golfers.
I do. Rory.
Rory.
Spieth. And my boy Justin.
Thomas or Rose?
Rose.
Rose. Score?
5 under.
5 under? Okay. Let's go to the next female in the year of the woman. Dave Bennett.
No, I'm not a female.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just trying to keep a theme going.
No. Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, minus 12.
Minus 12.
Very quick. Very, very efficient. Mm. Very efficient. Mike Jacobson.
I'm going to go. You haven't acknowledged, too, that I've gotten last place in each of the tournaments.
That's because I like you.
Consistently.
Yeah, I like you. And by the way, a career in sports, it's working out really well for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
Biggest sports expert on the show, along with Dave Ennett, and look where you are.
Appreciate you bringing that
Good
up.
Good job, Mike.
Thanks, Mayor.
Is this another golf thing that I can sleep through?
Yes. Okay. Back to sleep. Nighty night.
Yeah, you're the lucky one.
Ricky Fowler,
yeah,
Adam Scott, Charles Schwartzel.
And by the way, Charles is from Charles in Charge. I don't know if you remember that, the old Scott.
Of Our Lives?
Yeah,
Charles Schwartzel was the original Charles in Charge.
Right.
Did he speak
score?
At the convention?
He
too?
Did.
I need
at
a score.
The RNC?
Yeah, score for the PGA?
7 under.
7 under. Mm. John DeCoste.
Lee Trevino, Gene Saracen, Carol Baer-Sager.
Yes.
Sleep under.
Oh, my.
I don't like your
chances.
I don't like your chances.
Just move on.
And are we down to me? Am I it? Is this the last one, Sandra?
Did you do your mom?
Sure.
Oh, do her later.
Yeah, she's going to call in with her picks later.
Yep.
Phil Mickelson, Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, 16 under par.
Really?
Yeah, the PGA normally goes low.
Oh, it does?
16 under par.
Isn't Carol Baker Sager, isn't she a composer?
Yeah, and a hell of a golfer apparently as well. So, congratulations, John. Those are terrific picks. We have all of those picks. Let's take one listener off the air at 312-981-7200. Sandberg will pick the listener, and you'll be able to play as well. We'll add my mother later, maybe Ross, maybe 15 or 20 other people to make this completely impossible. And thank you for playing our game. We're back with the news next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
In the spring of 1971, I met a girl. The first time I saw her, we were, appropriately enough, in a class on political and civil rights. She had thick blonde hair, big glasses, wore no makeup, and she exuded this sense of strength and self-possession that I found magnetic. After the class, I followed her out, intending to introduce myself. I got close enough to touch her back, but I couldn't do it. Somehow I knew this would not be just another tap on the shoulder.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm all right song.
717. I don't care how you feel about Hillary or Bill. You got to give the old guy his due. There's nobody better at doing a political speech, or a talk, as he calls them, than Bill Clinton. Eric Herman, terrific writer and an expert on all things related to this convention and the Democrat side in particular. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, I was so mesmerized by the way he delivered the speech. And I'll grant you, and you do the same thing, Eric. You get a little behind it, maybe. You don't watch it like regular people do. But he acknowledged states around the room in Philly. Feminized his wife. You know, as opposed to the pants suit wearing robot, he made her into a wife, a grandmother, a mother. He hit all the numbers he needed to hit. I mean, you know, granted, a lot of people might think it's a big pile of BS, and it may well be, but he just killed it.
Steve, I could not agree with you more. He knocked it out of the park, and, you know, his speeches, it was a little bit long. It was about 42, 43 minutes, but you know what? You didn't feel it. At least I didn't feel it.
No, I agree.
It didn't feel long. And it was just mesmerizing. He is a natural. And I think, interestingly, in my opinion, you've seen two big stars so far at this convention. I mean, the previous night, clearly it was Michelle, who absolutely killed it.
Right.
Knocked it out of the park. And then Bill, last night, was just phenomenal.
And they followed up tonight with the president, the vice presidential nominee, the vice president, and Chelsea's tomorrow night, right?
Chelsea's tomorrow night, yeah.
Anyway, the Dems have done a nice job of putting the appropriate numbers out on the nights they need them to be. You're Republican or Democrat. Sorry, the Dems are winning the convention battle.
Well, and it's interesting. I thought that last night was also, yesterday and last night was also, very important for the Democrats because you saw a change in tone. The anger of the Bernie or bust people was less, or at least less audible, and the tone was more one of pivoting to unity and unifying behind the candidate, and I thought that was important.
Eric, I also enjoyed the storytelling. The 9/11 survivors, the mothers of gun violence. You know, I just thought the storytelling was just second to none last night. And I love Madeleine Albright's speech. We haven't really talked about her too much either.
She's right, a little. She's the fire hydrant that won't stop, man. She's unbelievable.
Right?
Don't forget her famous comment about cojones.
Yeah, exactly.
No, she is definitely not someone to trifle with. No, I agree. Look. I mean, it's interesting. If you're a speechwriter, this convention has been sort of a clinic on what works. And clearly what works is the personal. And you saw that in Michelle Obama's speech the previous night. I mean, one of the reasons it was so powerful was the way she talked about her daughters and how they live in a house built by slaves and the daughters play on the lawn with their dog. And
yeah, and I don't want to shortchange that moment, but there's another thing we didn't talk about yesterday, a great moment from the First Lady's speech where she said, we got in the car with these big men with guns, and I look at those little girls' faces. This is 2008, as they're looking out the window, and I thought, my God, what have we done?
Right.
And as a parent, though none of us will ever be in that position, that made her so much more the mom, even though, you know, I think we have to give it to the Obamas, too, because they appear to have raised those two girls immaculately.
Yeah, no, 100%. But I agree that I think that the remarks by the 9/11 survivors and the mothers of gun violence, and it's been very interesting. It was also fun to see Howard Dean do his little
He made fun of himself. That was good. It was good.
That was great. No, that was good stuff.
All right, so what do they need to do that they haven't done so far in the next couple of nights before, you know, they hit the road for Hillary to get the bounce that Trump may or may not have gotten?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think first of all they need to do two things. First of all, they need to continue to humanize Hillary and really burnish her reformer credentials, because there is a lot of anger out there. People want change. People think Washington is dysfunctional, and I am generalizing like crazy here, but they think that it's not working for them. So they need to really do, and Bill tried to do this last night, they need to burnish her credentials as a reformer. They also need to underscore that Donald Trump is not fit to be commander-in-chief. He's not temperamentally fit. He's not qualified. It's interesting to see, you're starting to see the introduction of this, of tying Trump to Putin, which I think we'll see more of from the Democrats, and I think is legitimate because he's praised Putin. So I think that's those two big things, burnishing Hillary and making Trump unacceptable, or even more unacceptable than he already is, are the two things they need to do.
Where do we follow you on social media, sir? On your MySpace page?
I don't want to get a bunch of angry tweets. I'm on Twitter at EW Herman.
Yeah, listen, angry tweets are part of the day, man. That's where we all live now.
I know, I just get so distracted.
The key is don't answer them. EW Herman, thank you. Right. I appreciate your time always. Let's take a break, come back, and we will debut in this week of politics the follow-up to the smash hit musical Hamilton. We'll give you a sneak peek of the musical DeCoste and I have been writing, and by co-writing I mean John, when we come back on 720 WGN. /7:26 in a week of politics. John DeCoste here. Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. And in a week of politics, we thought this would be a good time to preview an idea that we came up with a couple of weeks ago. Hamilton was huge. And we thought, well, how could we steal from Hamilton without having someone, you know, file a lawsuit against us? And that's why we came up with a tribute to one of the all-time great American presidents, Millard Fillmore. Because, like, Hamilton wasn't president, Millard Fillmore was.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know a lot about Millard Fillmore.
No, yeah. And he was, plus he gets a bad rap. He was listed, ranked as the 22nd worst, dead last, 22nd president, and he was the 13th.
Yeah, which is not easy.
No.
That's how bad he was. Yeah. Now, there's a number of songs. You're going to give us little snippets of these. Maybe do one here, and then we'll do a couple more later.
Sure.
Which one would you like to give us a snippet of? And again, I want people to understand, we're workshopping these.
Right.
It's very early in the process.
Well, and because it's my process, they're all parodies.
Yes.
So keep that in mind.
Yes.
None of this is original music.
So just picture giant block letters like Hamilton, but this is Millard. M-I-L-L-A-R-D.
Yeah. And
Millard.
And I should probably start off with the one that introduces his name. Susan Vega. My name is Luca.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give me a little of this.
Here we go. My name is Fillmore, but all my friends just call me Mill. Born in New York. A town that they call Summerhill. A name like Millard growing up ain't no fun. So I gave that name to my only one son. His name is Millard. He was almost beat to death.
Is that true?
Yes. Oh, he named his son Millard.
What a sweet lyrical hook.
Yeah. I knew I would not make it through that.
Oh, that's sweet. And that's just one of the songbook.
Yes. Yeah, we're working this out.
And a lot of people are saying, Steve, Hamilton was hip-hop. This doesn't sound like hip-hop. No, we're taking the traditional great American musical here.
And picture Liam Neeson singing this.
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, he's the only guy that took our call.
Yeah.
There you go, John.
Yeah, yeah. All right, now, we may do some of this at the show we're doing at Bell Cell.
Oh, yes. Bell Cell. August 12th. Friday, August 12th.
Also known as Sandberg's wedding day. Now, you may be saying, Steve, why wouldn't you go to your producer's wedding? Well, because I wasn't invited. So on the 12th, you can come out, because you weren't invited to Sandberg's wedding either. You can come out to the show. How do we get tickets?
You can go to Steve Cochran Facebook page, and there's a link there.
Facebook.com/Steve Cochran.
Correct, yes. And then or you can go to Bell Cell Banquets. And there's a link at the top of the page, and you can just click on that and get tickets. Mike Toomey from WGN Morning News,
yeah.
You and I, and we actually have the jingle. Can
we play the jingle? Jingle? Let's play the jingle. Play the jingle.
When a smile hits your face, laughter fills up the space. That's Steve Cochran. Come on out to Bell Cell, Aurora West, Naperville for the show.
I was actually really drunk when I sang that.
Well, you know what?
Were you in the shower?
Yeah. I was in the shower, yeah.
Again, yeah. Tickets at Facebook.com/Steve
And BellCellBanquets.com. And this is for people who have said, why don't you do a show out in Naperville,
and
Aurora?
The Western Burbs.
It's smack dab on New York Avenue. It's perfect, beautiful place. We'll have a good time.
And all of this, as always, is a service of Iceman Productions. Back with a big story next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
If you love this country, you're working hard, you're paying taxes, and you're obeying the law, and you'd like to become a citizen, you should choose immigration reform over somebody that wants to send you back. If you're a Muslim and you love America and freedom and you hate terror, stay here and help us win and make a future together. We want you.
Just so good. So good. I said this at the top of the show as Eric Edelstein joins us from AL Media. This is Eric Edelstein. Is it not on line 6? Okay, because it says Bill. I didn't know if he changed his name.
Sorry, I got Clinton on the brain.
Okay.
Oh, right.
Is it okay if I call you Bill? Would that be all right?
Yeah, I've got people to start Bill, if that's okay with you guys.
So here's the thing. I mentioned this at the top of the show. I am blessed to have seen Tiger Woods live, to see Michael Jordan live, and to see Bill Clinton live. Now, I wasn't in Philadelphia last night, Eric. You were and still are. But he is the Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan of speech making. And I don't care how you feel about the guy. I don't even care because I'm just talking about delivering the speech.
Right.
And accomplishing what he wanted to accomplish last night. I don't know how much of it's BS, and frankly, neither do you. But the fact is, he wove a story and hit every single mark he needed to hit for his wife last night. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, he's got that touch, and I think it's. I think I saw Bagala talking on CNN saying, you know, that Southern storytelling kind of tradition, the Mark Twain tradition, where he can tell an incredibly vivid story, and I think you saw that on display last night, and I think it, as you said, did a tremendous job. I think the people here, you know, everyone's sort of a critic or at least an analyst at this point in the world. And I think people said it was especially good because he didn't talk about himself, which for him,
hard to do.
People say it's hard to do, former president, all that stuff. And number two, it was emotional, you know, and it was incredible. As somebody who's the most famous woman on the planet, it seemed like he was giving us new information about her. Now, on the humorous side, there were people who were saying, as he was rolling through the years, like, oh, my God, what'd she do at 4 o'clock in August of 1976? You know, there was a little bit of, like, looking at your watch being like, well, wait, we're only in the 80s
right, right now? Yeah, they were having a Dukakis flashback from 1988.
Right, but overall, it was a home run. And look how far we came from the first hour of the convention yesterday, where, you know, people were thinking this thing could be a complete meltdown. I think the first 2 days have gone off exactly on script. So.
Yeah, and to humanize Hillary Clinton, which is what you've talked about since day one, you know, in the same way like you brought up as well, Eric, that, you know, she's talking to me about her grandkids with me being a first-time grandparent. And you're going, well, who's that? That's a human being. And to womanize her as well. And I was struck by, like, Dana Bash on CNN and several other high-level, cynical, hardened female journalists of the highest order were talking about how he spoke to women in the way he described his wife. And again, nobody knows what goes on behind closed doors in a marriage. My personal belief is it's been an arrangement for a long time. But that's their business. That's not mine. And by the way, I don't doubt that he does love her. I don't doubt that he does love his daughter completely and his grandkids. And whatever their arrangement is, he delivered it last night unbelievably. And I'm a fan specifically because he's that good at what he does.
Well, and as you say, every marriage is different. Everyone has their own arrangements, and it really isn't other people's business. And there's clearly a love and a connection and a love affair between those people that transcends lots and lots of things and lots of years. I think the other thing, stepping back, when I think there was some emotion from those female anchors who, as you say, are hard-bitten and cynical. Again, whatever your opinions are of Hillary Clinton, this is an historic moment, and it was very emotional seeing that roll call.
Yep.
When, you know, the United States did something we've never done. It is a very big deal. And, you know, I'm the father of a daughter who, you know, since she was the littlest, said, well, how come there's no girls? You know, why aren't there any girls that have been president? And it's a really big deal. So,
as a woman watching it, seriously, and being objective, I felt completely empowered. I thought, I enjoyed, you know, I was saying earlier, Eric, the storytelling about her, you know, the 9/11 survivor. I was happy there wasn't, I mean, of course, you get a little Trump bashing here and there. That's all part of the convention. But I loved hearing the stories, the 9/11 woman who was burned over 80% of her body.
Well, that's interesting.
And Hillary came to visit her every month. And the cameras weren't even there. This wasn't like a photo op kind
of
thing.
But that's the interesting thing. And Eric, you can speak to this because you've known the Clintons for 20, 25 years, whatever it's been. I assume you're like the rest of the folks who know them well last night, the handful that do. You said you learned something last night. You learned about stuff you didn't know about.
Yeah, I've said it for a long time. There's stuff in her autobiography that's incredibly personal and revealing in a good way that sort of talks about how her character was formed that she doesn't really talk about. And I for one, and I think there's others, you know, wish she would do more of that humanizing because, she did it on your show. I think she did it in that satellite feed where she was saying if there's any little girls out there who are still up tonight. I mean, that's the side of Hillary I think a lot of people here are hoping we'll see more of. And, you know, we'll see what she does in her speech tomorrow night.
More with Eric from Philadelphia in just a second. But be honest now, all of you, when Bill started talking, then in 1998, how many of you were nervous, huh? How many of you thought that might go a little bad?
The Steve Cochran Show.
For Hillary Clinton, we give you Hillary's lifelong friend, Betsy Eberling.
If I can get in here.
Move back, guys. Move back.
Hello, fellow Democrats. On this historic, wonderful day, in honor of Dorothy and Hugh's daughter, and my sweet friend, I know you're watching. This one's for you, Hill. 98 votes. Yes.
Mike Madigan standing next to her, sadly, of course, as we know, because he doesn't speak to us. Mike Madigan lost the ability to speak some time ago in a coffee or tea drinking accident, apparently. Dear boy.
How cute was she, though? Her best friend from sixth grade.
Who's the Peanuts character that has a cloud following him around?
Pigpen.
Didn't you think, like, Madigan, in the middle of all that good feeling amongst the Democrats last night, he would have had the one cloud above him following him around?
I would have thought he would have moved over and let her little friend get in a little bit more.
No, please.
Now, what am I thinking? Sorry.
Eric Adelson's been in Philadelphia all week. He's running around on business and other things. Are you going to be in studio with us tomorrow?
I am.
Excellent.
You guys aren't sick of me. I'll come in.
No. We appreciate all the extra time this week. All right. So one of the things that has to be asked going forward into tonight is how do you follow that? And following that will be President Obama and the vice president. And who else is speaking? Oh, Tim Kaine. So what do they have to do tonight?
And Bloomberg, too, is speaking.
Oh, and Bloomberg endorsing tonight. Yeah.
Well, I actually think this has been set up pretty smartly, getting the Sanders folks, giving them their day, kind of teeing this thing up yesterday with the big dog, as people like to call Clinton. Now you've got, the president who I think has three things to do. Number one, a bit of the defense of his legacy, you know, this notion that America's in decline and falling apart and people are scared to go out of their houses. I think you're going to hear some of that. I think you're going to hear a full-throated endorsement of Hillary. And I think you will see a continued takedown of Donald Trump. I mean, I think it is a remarkable moment. We've seen it from Obama 3-4 times now, how perturbed he is personally that Donald Trump is this close to the White House. And I think he will not miss this opportunity to really do a takedown and in a way that, that maybe he's uniquely skilled to do, because he feels it personally, a guy who questioned his religion, questioned his birth certificate, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think you're going to see that sort of three-part thing. And then Kane, who, you know, most of the reviews of his speech in Florida were really positive, but not a lot of people saw it. So this is his moment to kind of take the thing to Broadway, so to speak. And he combines this sort of really kind of tough ability to put down Trump and be the attack dog with also this kind of aw shucks, I'm just a regular guy, your guy neighbor down the street. So, you know, hopefully the momentum will continue, and then the thing sort of sets up for the on deck hitter and the big marquee, which is Hillary Clinton's night tomorrow.
And does Chelsea Clinton get compared to her friend Ivanka tomorrow night? Because that's a tough competition.
Yeah, it is a tough competition, although she's a pretty poised woman and pretty good speaker in her own right. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, again, I think, you kicked off this segment with Betsy Ebeling. She spoke at the Illinois delegation breakfast yesterday, and she did again. Steve, you and I are broken records on this, but she talked about the human Hillary and her celebrating birthdays and having lunch with her old friends in Park Ridge and all that stuff, being a mom and a grandma. And, you know, I imagine Chelsea Clinton will touch on some of that stuff as well.
It's probably an unfair question, but for being around Bill Clinton for all these years, how could none of the politician side, the campaigner side, have worn off on Hillary?
Yeah, that's an unfair question. But, you know, it's just, I think some of that ability is innate. You know, some people are born with that kind of ability. And he's, as you said, you know, Tiger Woods, Babe Ruth, whatever you want to talk about, maybe the preeminent. So anybody sort of pales when you try to compare them to that. You know, what I give her credit for, by her own admission, is she says that's not her strength. And, you know, maybe in some ways, in the midst of this fever dream of politics we have, that'll be better once somebody's in office. I don't know. We can only hope so.
The other interesting strategic thing last night, and I believe it was intended because I think the president worked quite hard on that speech last night and made it look like he just walked up and said it, which is also part of a gift, the prep side. But the idea going forward that Hillary would somehow include him, like he would have some involvement in it, I was waiting for that moment. You know, I'll be right there with her.
Right.
If she has any questions, I'll be outside on that hard wooden chair she's made me sit on for years.
Well, the video.
And he didn't, yeah. But he didn't do that.
Yeah.
He right. showed restraint that surprised me. Did he miss an opportunity, though, to say, for people that are Bill Clinton fans, you know, you're going to have a chance to have two presidents here in some form?
No, because I think that's in some ways implicit, and I think that runs the risk of then making it about him, making it about, you know, all the stuff going back to the 90s. So I think you sort of get the good parts, let people imagine who want to imagine, and let people who say, I don't want to think about that, not give them any ammunition to go after him and criticize him. So I don't see it as a missed opportunity. I think it was incredible restraint and discipline, and I'm glad he didn't go there.
Sound like you were surprised he didn't go there.
Well, I think a lot of people here were surprised that he was so remarkably not talking about his own record. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean,
no,
he's
a president.
If you watch the video going into his speech, though, it was all about him and his presidency, which was very cool. It was a nice, you know, rewind. But I thought he was going to talk about himself in the speech, too. And he really didn't.
But it's pretty good.
His presidency, I should say.
Pretty good. And the fact that the Trumpster couldn't get any former presidents to come talk about him was kind of the obvious elephant with a bad hairpiece in the room last night as well. So
it is a gift, though. You're right. When he started out back in 1971, I think most of us would say, oh, God, here comes a family story.
He opened it up like
I didn't want him to stop talking.
He opened it up like a Mark Twain novel.
Right.
1971, I met a girl.
Right.
All right, you got me. Right. I'm in. So again, look,
you can do it.
There's no way to quantify the amount of BS coming out of both of these conventions completely, but the Democrats have won the first two nights by a long shot, a landslide, if you will. But the good news for people like me is they've still got two nights to screw it up. So stand by for that. And Eric, I'll see you tomorrow. AL Media for you. Yes, sir?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for the extra help, as always, in a couple minutes before 8 on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me, kiss me good.
8:12, Dean Richards live from Channel 9. Good morning, Dean.
I am ready to join the conversation, Steve, whenever it changes.
Well, that's good. All right, before we get to the Hollywood news, we brought this up a couple of hours ago and haven't had time to chase it much, but text question of the day, and the text lines are still open. What annoying trend with children is driving you nuts? Annoying trend with kids. This is why it came up. Sandberg stepson to be is technical terms here because it's her stepson. It had a sleep under.
Sleep under?
Yeah, sleep under.
What is sleep under?
Well, that's where you get a friend to sleep over you and mock you and throw things at you in the bunk bed. No, a sleep under is where you go to someone's house at apparently the regular evening time. You bring your pillow and your blanket, right, but then your parents come to pick you up at 11.
Well, that's not... That's just hanging out at your friend's house.
That's not a sleepover.
That's
anything.
That's not a sleep anything.
It's a sleep nothing is what that is.
You're not. It's not a sleepover until you've annoyed your friend's parents.
Exactly. And until you've woken up in the morning, you've broken something.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You've interrupted them and their special mommy and daddy time.
Anybody
you've done all
that. Anybody knows that.
Right. So sleep unders, that's an annoying trend. And an annoying trend, which frankly I thought started with my kids, but I found out it goes back to like the late 70s. The goodie bags at birthday parties for the kids whose birthday it isn't.
Everybody has to be a winner, Steve.
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody has to get something.
Annoying trends for children, 312-981-7200. And obviously none of this applies to Abigail Grace because whatever she gets is fine and she should get more. My grandchild.
Including party favors.
Yeah.
Is it bad that when I was a kid that, you know, the guests got little goodie bags and me, the birthday boy, got nothing?
Wow.
Wait a minute. You as a kid, your family was doing goodie bags?
No, we weren't.
I'm going to go, come on, man.
Just a joke.
You know another trend they're doing now?
I did not get anything, but the goodie bag part was fake.
Right.
They're having birthday parties, but instead of bringing a gift for the kid, you're supposed to bring a charitable thing for a charity, which is cool. But
you mean not if the kid says, I want
to but
do
it's always
that.
The it's parents'
just in
decision.
General, bring an extra charity
thing? It's just the parents say, please no gifts, but you know, we're gearing towards this charity. And then people say, oh, I got to bring a gift too. I feel bad for the kids. So you end up doubling up.
Yeah, I remember at my birthday as a kid, my mother put out, in lieu of flowers.
That's hurtful.
That's unnecessary
that's
is what
hurtful.
That is.
Yeah.
Coming up, the MTV Award nominations have been announced, and that's news to me because I didn't know there was an MTV Awards anymore.
Yes, you did.
This is the MTV Movie Awards or MTV?
So these are the VMAs, Steve.
The Video Awards for the videos that MTV awards. Doesn't show.
Well, they do a little bit. Not very much.
We also have Walking Dead star Blade Runner remake, Dean hosting the Titanic at Rivendell. I didn't think they could actually get the ship there. Somehow they've managed to do that.
It's a big park.
And convention ratings, Dean has those. Plus, Dean, exciting news for you in segment two. John will be premiering another snippet of a song we're workshopping for a follow-up to Hamilton, our musical Millard.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, tribute to Millard Fillmore.
That's burying the lead. We should start with that.
Yeah, so when we come back, that's part of it as well. Is there anything you'd like to share with the class at this point, John? How about you, Dean?
No.
All right, good.
I was in Austin, Texas yesterday.
Why'd you go there?
I was doing some interviews with Jeff Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a
new
movie. He's actually a pretty cool guy.
No, he's a great guy.
I think he's chilled out a little bit.
He's chilled out through the loopy years. That's a lot of weed.
He may have been through the year. I can't really say that that's true. But he's in this new movie called Hell or High Water, where he plays a Texas marshal searching for these two crazy brothers who are robbing banks all over Texas. That's why we did the interviews there. But he was super cool. It was cool to, you know, interviewed all the stars in the movie. But my favorite part was meeting the real-life Texas sheriff on whom Jeff Bridges' character is based, a gentleman by the name of Parnell McNamara, I believe his last name was. But he was the guy. He was the sheriff in Waco County, Texas, that brought out all the children from the David Koresh
Oh, you're kidding.
Massacre.
Remember
that? This guy's a real-life bona fide law enforcement hero. Walks into the theater. You know, we're at the premiere of the movie. He walks in. He's got his gun right on his side.
Sure, of course he does.
Side piece on him, but couldn't have been nicer. How you doing there? I'm Sheriff Parnell.
Wow.
And strip searched me. I insisted on it. He didn't want to. I insisted on it.
That's a great story to tell. I want to be strip searched by a real Texas marshal.
Yeah. This guy was the real deal. Real deal. Amazing guy. Amazing stories. But that's who this Jeff Bridges character is based on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, anytime you can fly off to Austin for a few hours, that's not a bad thing.
About as long as I was there, a few hours.
Hey, one other thing. I rolled up on a bank robbery yesterday in the Western Burbs.
Really?
I'm going down Roosevelt. And suddenly there's cops flying by me, you know, and I mean, obviously with an intent. And a quarter mile in front of me, they're all flying into this little strip mall, and there's police everywhere. Now, unless somebody had a nasty paper cut from a withdrawal slip, there was either an attempted robbery or a bank robbery. And I got to tell you, based on the police response, if there's one lesson you take out of the show today, kids, don't rob a bank.
Wow.
Do not rob a bank. It's a bad idea.
What would you do if you were in the bank? Let's say you're in there, you know, making a deposit, getting your free cup of coffee.
Oh, and somebody robbed the bank?
Trying to steal a pen.
I would take the robber down and save others, as I always do on a daily basis. I mean, I I'm in line at Walgreens. Just as a message to the other people in the store, I'll take anybody down. I'll throw one person down to send a message to others.
Yeah, my mom said thanks for that,
Hold
by the way.
Hold still, Granny! Right. 818, more with Dean in a moment. And another song from Millard, the musical To Follow Hamilton.
Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
All right, why don't you give me the convention ratings, because I am curious. How's it doing? How'd they do last week? I don't even know what the numbers were like last week.
I never saw any overall numbers. The ratings were up a little bit on the news stations last week, but significant is that CNN's ratings, this is for the first night, over 70% higher than they were the first night in 2012. That's enormous.
Why would that be?
That is an enormous jump. I don't know if it was because that was the night that Bernie was speaking.
Maybe.
And people were tuning in for that.
It could also be indicative of a very high turnout, right? If it translates to November, if there's that kind of interest?
Maybe. You know, who knows? I mean, if it was people tuning, if they were Bernie fans, does that mean higher turnout now that Bernie's not the candidate? I mean,
yeah, that's a good point.
I think that people wanted to see if he was going to pull a Ted Cruz.
Right.
You know, that people wanted to see how he was going to, you know, step away from it.
That's a huge number.
I think that's part of it. Michelle Obama's speech probably kept people. I don't think people said, ooh, Michelle Obama's going to be on. I have to watch. Although, in retrospect, they probably will in the future, given how amazing that speech was. I think it was the Bernie Sanders effect on Monday night. Listen to this. Even Fox had their highest rated night at a Democratic convention in their history on the first night.
Well, that's got to be Bernie. I think it's definitely got to be Bernie. I think you're right.
Interestingly, they came in fifth in the ratings for the convention. CNN was number one. MSNBC came in second. That's even unusual, but I guess, you know, maybe falls, you know, along partisans' lines. It's MSNBC, NBC, ABC, and then Fox at number five.
You know, I got to play something for you. Speaking of Fox, would you give me the Bill O'Reilly clip, Jake? Bill O'Reilly last night on the show was referencing the Michelle Obama speech that you referenced.
Oh, this the slave. I wake up in a house that was built by slaves.
Exactly. Michelle Obama was talking about, I wake up in a house built by slaves and I see my daughters playing on this beautiful lawn. That whole chunk. Here's Bill O'Reilly last night on his show.
Finally tonight. Factor tip of the day. As we mentioned, Talking Points memo, Michelle Obama referenced slaves building the White House and referring to the evolution of America in a positive way. It was a positive comment. The history behind her remark is fascinating. Free blacks, whites, and immigrants also worked on the massive building. There were no illegal immigrants at that time. If you could make it here, you could stay here. In 1800, President John Adams took up residence in what was then called the Executive Mansion. It was only later on they named it the White House. But Adams was in there with Abigail, and they were still hammering nails. The construction was still going on. Slaves that worked there were well-fed and had decent lodgings provided by the government, which stopped hiring slave labor in 1802. However, the feds did not forbid subcontractors from using slave labor. So Michelle Obama is essentially correct in citing slaves as builders of the White House, but there were others working as well. Got it all? There will be a quiz. Just put the quiz.
I just don't think you can do an anecdote about slaves and say they were well-fed and had decent lunch.
Yeah, they loved it.
If you're staying at the peninsula and you're a slave, you're still a slave.
Wow.
Oh, check. All right, so let's run through some of these show business stories so we can get to the musical. MTV awards are out. Who's the winner?
The
nominations.
These are just the nominations. Beyonce got the most nominations. She got 10 in all.
Bay getting it done.
Bay. Thank you, of course, already. I'm sorry, 11 nominations, including Video of the Year for her song Formation from the album Lemonade. Your girlfriend Adele got eight nominations, 7 for the music video for the song Hello. Interestingly, Taylor Swift, 0 nominations.
What?
Wow. She gets nothing.
Oh, it's going to be a tough night tonight. I got my Swifties meeting. You know where my Taylor Swift fan club I have in my tree for it?
You have to explain that to us. Mm. Like, we don't know what a Swiftie meeting is.
It's a bad meeting.
I thought it was just about cleaning hardwood floors, the Swifties. Drake's Hotline Bling also was nominated. He's at the United Center tonight, in case anybody is interested. Tickets are still available. Bieber's Sorry got nominated. And Kanye West, the famous video that has people just, allegedly famous people, naked, laying all over each other. So those are the nominations for Video of the Year. And the VMAs are going to be on August the 28th. So clear that date up on your schedule, Steve.
What's this Titanic thing you're hosting?
This is a thing called Titanic Live, where they show movies on big screens throughout the park in Ravinia. Mm-hmm. And the no less than the Chicago Symphony Orchestra plays the score live. It's amazing.
That's cool.
I've done these in the past. So this year they're going to show the 11-time Academy Award-winning film.
Will you actually be sinking a ship in Highland Park?
Yes. Yeah, it's a big park. It's been dry. Mm-hmm. The grass needs the water. I host a pre-screening discussion. What we do is I'm like in a certain area, and people tweet questions in that show up on a big screen. And then I answer the questions about the movie.
Wow. Or
I'm sure people are going to be out there asking questions. What's it like working with Steve Cochran?
Yep.
In fact, that's what I encourage people, come to see this because it's a really cool event. But the more embarrassing the question about Steve up on the big screen for everybody in Highland Park, the better. I look forward to that. The pre-discussion will start at 6, and the movie is going to start at 7 o'clock.
And I'll be playing in the recreation of the death scene in Titanic.
Yeah, the death scene, but really the part you want to see is me holding Steve while I scream, I'm king of the world.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. Think that's easy? You think this is easy?
No, because
we do this without special effects.
I could have fallen.
Yeah, this is without special effects.
And watch Channel 9 all morning so you can see the Jeff Bridges piece from Austin yesterday. But keep in mind that you're certainly welcome. John and I are going to be at Bell South Banquets right on the border of Naperville and Aurora, August 12th. That's 2 weeks from Friday night, 7:30. It's an Iceman production. And we'll be out there doing stand-up comedy, and you can get tickets by going to Bellsalle Banquets, B-E-L-L-E-S-A-L-L-E, banquets.com or facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Again, a Nice Man production. But we may debut, John, you've got to decide this, and Dean, we may debut our sequel to Hamilton that John's been working very hard on. It's Miller. Do you have another song from Miller that Dean could hear?
Yes, I do. We wanted to do a song about his wives, who in Washington circles were probably the most unattractive women in the 1800s.
All right, let's hear it.
Based on Ebony and Ivory. Abigail and Caroline, both my wives that I had for almost 50 years' time, side by side on my mantle, can't tell why they look like Abe.
That's so sweet. And there's more to come with that. Can you give me another one?
Well, another fact, he saved books from the Library of Congress when it burned.
Oh, he did?
He was. That was one of his moments. So you would know this, Dean. Billy Joel, Start the Fire.
Mm.
We didn't start the fire?
Sure.
Shakespeare and Macbeth, Nathan Hale was put to death, Tom Sawyer, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe's insane. We need to get these classics back, and poor Richard's almanac. We didn't start the fire, but the books are burning, no more pages turning in the Library of Congress. We must continue reading, though the South seceding.
Oh, that is nicely awesome. Done.
So this is just these awesome. Are just to get things going for Millard Fillmore.
Yeah, and picture the poster with a picture of an old guy from the 1850s who you wouldn't be able to identify in a lineup.
Liam Neeson.
In giant block letters that say M-I-L-L-A-R-D, Millard, maybe with two exclamation points.
Hey, do you have any pull with Jeff Bridges? Because we could ask him to...
He would be outstanding.
I think he would be great.
He'd be outstanding in it.
I'm
picturing a John Goodman as Millard Fillmore.
Oh, that is good.
Well, we're workshopping it now. If you want to hook us up with Mr. Goodman's people, we'll let him know.
We'll get all the people together.
By the way, triple underscale for all you actors listening. All right, we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Big story next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! Help make history. And volunteer, because this race is going to be won on the ground. And it's going to be won in Colorado and in Iowa and North Carolina and Michigan and Florida and Pennsylvania. And then we're going to the White House.
Who knew Howard Dean had a sense of humor? Howard Dean making fun of the scream from Iowa that ended his presidential chances in 2004. Oh, what a different world we live in now. Rokon's live in Philadelphia. How are you surviving there, fella?
You know, I saw that live in the room, and I can't unsee that, Steve.
It was odd, but it was cute.
Yeah, it's charming. It just took me back. I interviewed him in 2008 in Denver, and he did that in the interview. It's kind of a standing bit.
Oh, I didn't realize he'd made fun of himself before. So he was doing this 8 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
It would have been 8 years ago.
It's kind of a... I mean, the thing is, you don't get to see a lot of Howard Dean, right? He's kind of one of those guys
that,
like Pauly Shore, shows up every once in a while and then goes away.
Do you know the Vermont delegation last night, Howard Dean and Bernie Sanders, that's 50% of the population of Vermont, those people. Almost the entire state was there. Have you crossed Bernie's path since you've been in town?
Well, no. I mean, I haven't. Other than to see him in the hall, I haven't. He and I were going to go out. We're going to do a sit-in at the MSNBC.
Rokon, I want you to help me up after I sit in.
Actually, you know what's so funny is how much his brother sounds like him. Did you hear the brother yesterday?
I saw it with the sound down. I was in an area where I couldn't have the sound up, and because of the restrictions. But there was a sort of an emotional thing for Bernie.
Yeah, yeah, it was. And for his brother, Larry, too, which is funny, his brother, Larry Sanders.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just, but his brother looks like he's like 30 years younger than he is. And I don't know why that, one of them is having some work done. Either Bernie's having work done to look older or this, and I don't know, either way.
But that would be an interesting procedure. Bernie's actually 37 and he goes in to look older.
Make my hair look really white, really white.
Last night, again, to beat a dead horse here, but Bill Clinton, for my money, better, as good as he's ever been in delivering whatever steaming pile of BS that he may or may not have delivered. But yeah, he did it like he was delivering an audio book. He could have gotten me cookies and milk and read to me. The man can tell a story. And I appreciate it from a perspective of being on stage, somebody who's that good. That was impressive.
Yeah, you know, the art of seduction is really, really important mm-hmm. in politics, right? And he is the ultimate seducer. He was great in that room. Now, I watched it again on television this morning, and mm-hmm. it wasn't quite as impactful, I didn't think, on TV as it was in the room. He owns a room. He makes eye contact. You feel like he's talking directly to you mm-hmm. in the room. I know that's one of the skills on TV, but when he was looking down and looking into those that, and we were above him, he would look up and you're like, he's talking to me. And he's really, really, really great at that. And yes, he made some very obvious omissions during the speech last night.
You know, 1998. Uh-oh, where's he going now?
I had to actually, during the speech, I was looking up, how old is Chelsea? Because he was recreating her childhood and moving pieces around in that narrative. And there were, he's there to support his wife. You know, he owes her this one. Yes?
Without a doubt, sure.
And it was interesting because Jeff and I ended up last night at the ABC bar at their hotel, and there was a lot. It was interesting, you know, for all the mainstream media talk. There were a lot of people that came back, grizzled veterans, producers, and reporters who were like, "Come on, did you?" And so it was charming, and it was interesting. That's what he was supposed to do.
And he delivered in a huge way. But how do we know that the arrangement that they've had for years, because you have to argue a long time to tell me they haven't had one, the arrangement that they've had for years hasn't turned into something where, you know, they truly are the two that like each other and they're roommates or whatever they've been for years. And he really does want her to win because he wants her to win. I mean, I don't know how you could be with somebody for that long, have a kid and grandkids with them and stay with them and not have some fondness for each other on some level.
Oh, I think that's probably true. I think that's probably true. And I think she just understands that this is how he's built. I believe that the term in 92 that she used in Arkansas, or it was used about him in Arkansas that was supposed to be lifted from her, was he's a tough dog to keep on the porch. And that is.
I don't think she learned that at Wellesley.
No. No, well, you know, remember, I mean, that's the one thing about Hillary Clinton that is always fascinating me, is that she is regionally accented, right? No matter
she's
where
zealot.
She is, when she lands
she's
somewhere.
Zealot. Wherever she turns up, she's zealot. Yeah, the Woody Allen movie.
Right. Yeah. So she's kind of fun, but in that respect. But, you know, I get the sense that, whatever personal commitment they have to each other, and they clearly, they did not get a divorce. She chose to stay with him. She would have been well within her rights after that public humiliation and then her defense of him and the vast right-wing conspiracy and all that. You know, that whole deal was, anyone would have forgiven her, and she probably would have had an ascendant political career either way. This, though, was an interesting moment in American politics. It was an interesting moment in pop culture last night to see him get out and defend her. I've seen him over the years, and in the last few, he has not looked well. And
I'm glad you brought this up, because he had a shake in his left hand last night, which got a lot of traction online. Is he okay? Is he okay? I mean, look, I know him a little. You know him a little. He's not the type that gets nervous in front of a crowd. That's when he gets going. You know, he gets going. That shake has to be physical. Do we know of any particular medical issue?
Well, you also hear that in his voice too. You hear the quiver in his voice.
Yeah.
And he's been doing that for years. And he has at times I've seen him in rooms where he's looked, you know, pale and you know, gaunt. And so I've wondered that for a long time. I don't know anything. I just wonder, you know, where he is. But he looked as well last night as I have seen him look. He certainly owned the room. It was a positive night. Got a little weird at the end when they did that whole effect of her popping up on stage. It was very Dr. Evil taking over your TV. Well,
Max,
right?
Headroom, yeah. Remember Max Headroom?
Yes. It was a little too tight of a shot. The breaking of the ceiling was a little much, and then it was like she was demanding the $1 million, and she was in that room in Chappaqua, New York, and was it the basement of a pub or something? I don't know. I didn't fully understand. I think that took away from the power of the evening, because it was. And again, this is a stage show, right? I mean, there isn't real truth that's supposed to be here. And, you know, for all the people who are going, I can't believe all the theatrics. I mean, Donald Trump came out to a smoke machine,
right?
So this is let us stop and put this all in some sort of perspective. This is a show designed to try to win your heart and mind for this week. That's all it is. The real campaign starts again on Friday. And Trump is obviously out there trying to, you know, poop in the punch bowl, because that's his job as the Republican candidate.
By the way, Donald Trump, here's a little perspective for you. Donald Trump is 4 months older than Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton's been around forever. He left the White House in 2000. Trump's trying to get the White House now. Bill Clinton, that one, turned 70 in August. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, these would be Reagan, it's always said, is, you know, was the oldest, and his critics say he was so feeble when he came into office, and then especially after the assassination attempt. And it's ironic we're talking about that today, because John Hinckley is going to get freed today. This news is now breaking. So
yeah, what do you know about the story? I haven't seen the full details.
Well, he's going to be released to his mother's custody. I can't imagine how old his mother is now either. But we talk about the age of these folks who are ascending to the White House, and it would be I think Hillary might be within a month or two of Ronald Reagan's age. And so, and there were people, you know, they had a bunch of Hillary's friends from childhood there.
Yeah.
Including the women from Park Ridge and stuff that. And it is really interesting to see, you know, they're 70 years old, right? I mean, these are people who, and Hillary looks pretty good for being 70, and she's active and she's out there. But
she's now 68, which I believe is how old Reagan was when he was elected. Right? Wasn't he 68? I think he was 68.
Oh, I rounded up. And I know the people in their 60s hate it when you round up to the 7 number.
Yeah.
Because I hate it when people rounded me up to the 5.
69 in October, so Trump's a couple years older.
Yeah. So he would be the oldest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. By far. Yeah. And remember when we thought John McCain maybe is too old? And then remember when he picked that woman named Sarah Palin because she was younger, and remember she didn't read anything? Remember? You remember.
I don't remember. I don't recall that. I tried to erase that from my memory banks. You know, the thing, too, about Trump is that he plays younger, too, because of the hair. You know, he's just so distracted by it. He's just not sure what it is on the top of his head.
Right.
But
and if it's going to attack you.
It's attacked him, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. whatever that is. But anyway, I'm feeling like a moment where Hillary's speech is now going to be. I want you to write this down, Steve. Do you have a pen?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I believe that on Friday morning, the conversation is going to be how anticlimactic Hillary Clinton was.
That's highly possible. Yeah, that's highly possible. She's following the big two. She's following the three, right? Michelle Obama, and then last night Bill Clinton, and tonight Barack Obama. That's a tough room to close.
And I think Kane is going to be. Kane's got a little bit of that Bill Clinton in him. He's capable of telling a story like he's talking to you.
Yeah.
And that was a special moment. You know what's also really fascinating too? I was watching young women in the room last night. Oh, stop it, Steve. That's not what I meant. I was watching young women watching.
Keep your options open.
keep watching Bill Clinton. And it is women's reaction to Bill Clinton. I know that this is probably not a pro-feminist thing to say, But watching women watch Bill Clinton is fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
Because there is a lot there, you know, their eyes open up wider. Mm-hmm. It's like they're like, oh, hey, wait a second. Including these I don't know if they were. I think they were, we were up in the ABC, next ABC and NPR last night. And these were young NPR interns or workers or something. And they could be the grandkids, I think, essentially, of his.
Right.
And these women were like, oh, my God, he's so hot. I'm like, wow.
And then Uncle Rose sat him down and said, I'm going to tell you about 1998, you people. You sit there and listen. All right, you're on at 3. 3 o'clock yes, today. The Real Con Show. Anna DeVlantis will join him live. And we will talk to you later on, my friend. We're back with more of the Steve Cochran Show in a moment. Wintrust Community Banks sponsors this hour.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, you're members of the Anthony Ponce fan club. You can't figure out why he's not on TV. And then you saw him on TV and he's driving around a Lyft. You call him, Dave, I don't even know. Do you call him taxis? Lyft car.
Shared rides. What they are.
We get to Mr. Ponce in just a second. I do want to tell you, we're still taking texts on these annoying kid trends. And by the way, there's no tie between the Ponces and annoying kids. They're all delightful.
Of course.
Here's something from the 773. Parents staying at the birthday party with the kids. Hot trend. Drop your kids off at the birthday party and stay. I work with kids professionally. I've been to birthday parties where there are 15 kids and 10 or 12 adults. I mean, it changes the whole party. Yeah. Or you're spending some dough there,
I think
too.
It depends on the age, don't you?
Well, if it's
if they're like one or two.
If they're invited adults, right?
Right.
Then it's a different story. Sandberg, you started this with the sleep-unders. Do you know about the parents staying at the parties?
I do, and I've had to participate in that, and it's also awful because it's just parents standing around bragging about their children.
Right.
Can't
you brag about yours?
Yeah, but I'm not into that.
You should.
I like to let the kids be awesome on their own.
No, you should definitely brag about them. You should brag about them all day long.
Oh,
even with stuff they haven't done. Make things up. But that's a trend you've seen as well.
Oh, yes. There's the parents. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I'll drink wine while they do whatever. Like, oh, that's relaxing.
How do 10 parents drop by? You don't have food for them? You don't have booze?
There's no such thing now as, like, you don't open a car door and the kid runs out to the door. You have to walk kids up to the door now.
There's
or to the event.
And, yeah.
If you go into the pinstripes for bocce and bowling, it's a 20-minute handoff. You might as well just stay for the whole damn
Dave
party.
Will back this up. Mary, I don't know if you remember this, but growing up in the 70s in particular, and probably the same in the 60s, when you were growing up, the car would slow down to 20, and you'd have to roll. Mm-hmm. You'd dive out of the car, and you'd roll.
Or we'd have to walk 10 miles to get to the party.
Uphill.
Yep. Yeah.
In a snowstorm.
Tuck and roll.
There's only one car in the family, so if somebody else had the car, forget it. Ride your bike.
Here's another text here, 630. We had late overs. This is different than sleepovers or sleep-unders for our kids 10 to 15 years ago, but this is the same concept as sleep-unders, just a different name. Late-overs and sleep-unders are the same thing.
It's stupid.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
We did have one texter that suggested that they've had kids do that at their house, but then they drove all the kids home. Now that I could accept.
That's a smart idea.
And we used to do this when I was a kid. It's just you'd get scared at somebody else's house, and your mom would have to come and get you in the middle of the night. That's called a sleep under.
Oh, well, Steve, yeah, that's called being a baby.
But that's what we called it when one of our friends chickened out in the middle of the night.
You don't do that much anymore, right?
No, just a couple times a month.
Yeah, or if somebody got a stomach ache, that always happens.
Right.
My stomach hurts. Come and get me.
They ate too many.
And then the parent would call and say, your kid's going to throw up. Get over here now.
Right.
It's a mystery. You got an annoying trend that is going on with kids now. And we're not talking about annoying children. We're talking about trends with children. So I think we've identified a new one with this parents join the party. Yikes. At 9:15, standing by is the legend, Anthony Ponce. All right. So, Anthony, nice to have you on the show again, by the way. How are you?
A legend is a very strong word.
No, your entire family. You're all legends. Live with it. So, you know, we watch on TV, we love your work on TV, and suddenly you're not on TV, and we hear that you're driving a Lyft shared ride vehicle, and that's all well and good. God bless everybody that's doing that with Lyft or Uber or whoever, But, you know, most people don't give up TV gigs for this. So did you bump your head?
You know, I've been asked that a lot over the last couple of days. And, gosh, maybe I'm doing something crazy. I am scared. For the record, I am kind of scared. I took a little bit of a pay cut to do this.
Yeah.
But my wife has given me the green light to try it for 6 months, see how it works out, and then we'll reassess from there. You know, at that point, it's fish or cut bait at that point.
I got to tell you something, and Dave, I think you'd agree with me on this as well. Mm-hmm. If he wanted to drive somebody around, Allison Rosati'd probably enjoy a driver. Why couldn't you pick up Allison? Bring her into work.
Oh, man. Well, here, one of the things people have been asking is, hey, how do I get a ride from you? But, you know, I have a great story. And the whole thing about this is that I'm a Lyft driver like any other Lyft driver.
Right.
It's just random who I get matched up with, what passengers I get matched up with. You know, as soon as you click in driver mode on the Lyft app, there's a passenger mode, a driver mode. It's whoever pops up, you know. You have to pick them up. They get a little rating. You have no idea where you're going to drive them. It could be a five-minute ride. It could be all the way out at O'Hare in rush hour traffic. So you never really know what you're going to get. And I think that will maintain kind of the authenticity of the whole storytelling experience, I'm hoping.
Now, this is not a Channel 5 NBC project, though. This is an independent documentary you hope to do.
No, exactly. Yep.
This is gutsy, man. This is gutsy.
Yeah, well, I had pitched, not this particular idea, but, you know, I had pitched podcast ideas in the past at NBC, and I heard cricket. So, you know, I was like, this is time to do something on my own and see if it sticks.
So in your vehicle, you tell the people when they're getting in, they're on camera, or how does that work?
No. So this is podcast, so it's audio only.
Oh, it's audio, okay.
Yep, exactly. And so what I kind of learned after a couple weeks of driving is that for me, the best way to get people to open up and share stories, I put these signs up in the back seat where they can read them that say about your driver. And then there's a bunch of pictures of me like on the anchor desk with the NBC microphone to give me a little street cred as a journalist. And then in a little short paragraph, it says, Anthony is driving as part of a podcast storytelling project. And if you're willing to answer a couple questions on tape, he won't use your name, nothing to identify, just your voice and maybe your age and occupation if it's relevant to the line of questioning. And once people read that little placard and kind of see it, a lot of them are intrigued. And they're like, all right, what are these questions? You know, what do you got for me?
And then they play along.
Then they play along. Yeah, exactly. And I'm not, you know, I'm not asking things that are too, I guess, outlandish right out of the gate. I gauge how open this person is, how talkative they are, and go from there. You kind of have to aggressively listen to see where the conversation leads. And I've been, without spoiling anything, I've been picking different themes each week to talk to writers about. And, you know, a little teaser, you know, after the Orlando, on the really serious side, after the Orlando shooting,
sure.
I was asking them about gun issues and talking about that because that was what everyone was talking about that week.
Right.
On the other end, I've asked people questions and gotten some fascinating answers to questions like, all right, have you ever feared for your life? And if so, what was the story behind that? Or have you ever experienced anything you would categorize as the supernatural? And if so, what is the story behind that? A lot of people have, you know, these kind of crazy little anecdotes about their life experiences. So I plan on taking this podcast in any number of directions, depending on what's happening that week and also just kind of what I am curious to hear about, you
sure.
know? Everyone's got fascinating stories. You guys know that.
Yeah. Now, I would have to say, and any of you guys jump in on this, but I would have to say that the identification process is key here, but it can also take away from the intimacy of the interview unless you get somebody
right.
that's pretty cool about it, because people change if they know they're on camera or mic, right?
Totally. Totally. You know, when I brought this up to my dad, for example, you guys know he's
yeah.
you know, how long he's
yeah,
been
yeah.
doing this. He was like, all right, he's like, you have to figure out a way to maintain the authenticity of this of this project. And that's a challenge because there are legal issues. You know, I contacted the ACLU about the eavesdropping laws in Illinois. You can't just record someone without their permission.
Right.
That's not legal. So I had to find this balance between disclosure and consent and also authenticity. And so what I found is that if I tell them I'm only using their voices, I'm not even asking their names. I mean, their first names pop up on the app, but that's not used in the podcast. And the fact that it's audio only and there's not a 25, you know, I'm used to going around with a 20 huge honking TV news camera,
yeah.
which intimidates people. So when it's audio only and I'm not even looking at them, I'm looking on the road, my hands on 10 and 2, and we're in this enclosed space, sometimes up to a half hour, 45 minutes at a time, that authenticity isn't a problem. It's really been incredible how open people have been in that environment.
Obviously, this could turn into something video down the road, but the podcast, yeah. Audio podcast, this is a huge, huge category now. I mean, gigantic. Yep. So where can people hear it?
Okay, so people can hear it by subscribing to Backseat Rider. That's the name of the podcast on the iTunes or iPhone podcast app. You can just search Backseat Rider. There's a little placeholder in there because the first episode doesn't debut till late August. So people can just click subscribe, and as soon as I post that first episode, you'll get a notification that it's there. And I would also love it if anyone were to follow me on social media. I am trying to make this experience as interactive as possible. So what I would love is if people were to chime in on what they think I should ask the passengers that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? And have people perhaps post that to my social media, and maybe people could vote on it. And that way I could get, you know, I could get a little direction for what people care about. You know, what are people talking about this week that they want to hear opinions from folks that go beyond the 10-second man on the street soundbite that you hear on local news.
Yeah, the cliche that everybody does.
Yeah.
Listen, dude, I salute your courage.
Thank you.
I think you're a little nuts, but a little nuts turns into big things sometime.
Man, I'm hoping you're right. It's a bit scary. But again, 6 months, we'll reassess.
What kind of rating have you gotten as a Lyft driver so far?
You know what? I'm almost at a perfect 5 stars. Nice. I think I'm at 4.96. 4.96.
Nice, but you know what's important, again, is the identification part to that part of the story, too, because I don't think he wants to ask the question, have you ever feared for your life, without identifying himself first. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That could be a problem.
My life. Oh, man, you're absolutely right. Yeah, so far I'm doing well on the ratings, and, you know, it's important. You know, I don't want to ask anything that's going to just freak somebody out and give me 1 star. So that's also a fine line to kind of navigate.
Well, listen, it's a brave new world, and you gotta take chances, and you gotta do different things, and you gotta do what you need to do to get noticed. In a cool project like this, he could have some sort of giant academic grant come his way. He could have some crazy show business money come his way. He could be so rich he never returns his own family's calls, let alone ours.
From your lips to God's ear, sir. I appreciate the well wishes, and
just wanted to check on you because we thought you'd lost it. We thought maybe marbles were missing. But I get it more now. It's Anthony Ponce. Follow you on social media where?
Facebook, Anthony Ponce, Twitter, Anthony Ponce TV. And that's about all I got.
And all that'll link back to the Lyft story as well, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, buddy, be well, and take care of your wife. She's clearly a saint. It's
he's been so supportive. I'm a lucky guy.
Yes, you are. 9:24. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Oh, rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you.
9:42. We continue live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Rubber ducky, show number 700. At Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. And this is cool, Dave. Every year we get to do this. We get to introduce another duck derby, ducky derby, if you will, duck ambassador for the Special Olympics of Illinois event. You remember Nick Lorenz from last year?
Nick is awesome.
Nick is unbelievable. I endorse Nick for president. but I'm just as thrilled to meet Allie, who we will in just a second. Allie Renninger's here. First, though, Shelley, tell us what you do for Special Olympics Illinois.
Hi, Steve. I'm the director of the Windy City Rubber Ducky Derby and the director of corporate development at Special Olympics.
Do you actually have a card that says director of Rubber Ducky Derby? Because that's like the coolest thing you could ever be.
No, I don't.
Tell people what the Rubber Ducky Derby is.
It's an event we have every year. It's a signature event for Special Olympics, and it's on August 4th on the Chicago River. We dump 60,000 ducks off of the Columbus Street Bridge, and then Allie, our duck ambassador, picks the winner. The winner, the grand prize winner wins a Chevy Malibu 2016.
Oh, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Chevy dealers, for that. And that's next Thursday, then?
Yes.
What time do you dump the ducks?
We dump the ducks at 1 o'clock.
That's very cool. And Allie, it is so good to meet you. Tell us about you. Allie, how old are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I am 22 now.
You're 22 years old, and you're going to pick the winning duck out of all of those ducks. Do you get to keep a duck for yourself?
No.
No, because that's not professional amongst duck pickers.
No, no, they go back. The others go back.
Have you been to one of these duck derbies? Have you seen them?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, they're very cool. Very cool.
Yes,
you know, I never asked this. How do you get all the ducks out of the river?
Our great partners with Coca-Cola, they go and they get them out with nets. We have...
you catch the ducks.
Yep,
we catch the ducks. It's wild rubber duck season.
That's right.
Do you have duck divers?
No duck divers. We have an environmental boom that holds them together.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. And you're volunteering as a duck diver?
Sure. Absolutely.
So, Allie, you've competed in the Special Olympics?
Yes, I have done bocce, and I have done volleyball, soccer, and gymnastics.
How cool is that?
Wow. And basketball.
Yeah, well, just,
oh, by the way,
just the five. What's your favorite sport?
My favorite sport is volleyball.
And do you play that the most of the ones you mentioned?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And you've been doing that for a while?
I just started this week.
Oh, with a new session of it.
Yes.
Yeah, getting ready. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very cool to be able to get out there and compete with everybody. And, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but are you a medal winner?
Yes, I am.
What'd you win?
I have won over 50 medals.
50 medals?
Wow. 50.
Dave, how many medals do you have?
I don't have any medals.
I don't have any medals either.
Yeah. No.
We got like nothing. We got nothing when it comes to medals. Well, this is exciting. And then you get picked to be the Rubber Ducky Duck Derby Ambassador.
Yes.
All right. Now, here's the important part. We're going to raise some money here. How do we help? What do we do?
You can go to... ChicagoDuckRace.com,
okay,
and buy a duck online. The ducks are $5 for one, six for 25, or you can get 24 for $100 in a pack.
All
so
right,
you get some freebies.
And we'll post that on Facebook for the WGN Facebook page and also the Steve Cochran Facebook page. Facebook.com, Steve Cochran Show. And I bought ducks on Nick's team last year. I want to do that for you. So how do I find Allie's team?
You go to the Darling Ducklings,
okay,
and find Allie's name, Allie R.
And it's just a drop-down menu.
It's a drop-down menu.
And thank you very much.
Well, of course. Do you know how you're doing on duck sales? You feel like it's going pretty well?
Yes, I do.
The Darling Ducklings have raised nearly 12,000, have sold nearly 12,000 ducks.
Wow.
Already. And for the whole race, we've already sold about 40,000 ducks, and we're looking to sell 60,000 by the end of next week.
Oh, that's very good. Now, you mentioned this, and I lost it because I remember I got bonus ducks last year. What are the different levels?
Yep. So we have a single duck for $5,
yeah,
a quack pack, which is $25.
Right.
And you get a free duck there. And then we have a flock of ducks, which is $100. And we have a diamond duck pack for $1,000.
Yeah. So we hope everybody will go to the website, check it out, and help out as much as you can.
Yeah.
And again, the website for that is?
ChicagoDuckRace.com.
ChicagoDuckRace.com. Dave, I've already put you down for 12 diamond packs.
I'm on the website right now. So Darling Ducklings, 11,189 adopted.
Yep. Wow.
Nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Very nicely done. Your dad is here. Do you guys hang out quite a bit?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
He seems like a pretty good guy.
He's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty the best.
Yes, he is.
Now, do you have brothers and sisters, too?
Yes, I do. I have one brother named Adam.
Uh-huh. And what's Adam doing today? Is he in school?
He is not in school. He's at work.
Oh. So he's your older brother?
Yes.
Okay, good big brother?
Yes, he is.
Okay, what does he do for a job?
He's actually working down here now.
Oh, he is. He works in the city.
Yes, and he also lives down here.
I don't know how much older Adam is, but when you see him, tell him your friend Steve from the radio said he should give you $20. Yeah, I don't know why. It just seems like a nice thing to do. You want to say hi to any of your friends or anybody so you can say you said hi to him on the radio?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I just want to say hi to my friend Brian Carey.
Okay.
And I want to say hi to my Aunt Tracy.
All right. Dad, does that cover it? Did we hit the list?
I think you hit all the hot spots. Yes. All right. Very good.
Well, you got a beautiful smile. You seem like a wonderful person, and I'm honored to meet you.
And I feel the same way.
Well, you're very nice. You're very nice. Do you know Nick Lorenz? Do you know the guy that was in your last
year? Yes.
That guy's something else, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dad, you watch Nick.
Yeah.
One dad to another. You watch Nick, buddy. It's great to meet you. Congratulations on being an ambassador. Good luck with volleyball and everything else. And then you get to watch the Olympics and see those guys play as well. Maybe they'll be as good as you at some point. You can always hope. And Shelley, thanks to you and everybody at Special Olympics Illinois. It's amazing work you guys do.
Thank you. Thank you for having us here today.
You bet. ChicagoDuckRace.com. Dave and I are already spending money on the
I'm buying my ducks right now.
Yeah. Yay. All right. Enjoy the day, guys. Thank you. Back after this on 720 WGN. Musical director for the Steve Cochran Show, John DeCoste, was once part of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. Did most of her choreography.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, John, I don't want to put you on the spot, but all morning long we've been previewing the follow-up to Hamilton.
Right.
And I've claimed co-authorship here. Really, it was just an idea and a dream that a boy had, and you have run with it. You've run with it to the point where I'm just glad you're not running with a stick, because it's really, really going to be special. This is Millard.
Yes.
As in Millard Fillmore.
The musical.
The sequel to Hamilton.
Millard the musical.
By the way, the Hamilton people just contacted us, and it was something about an attorney and cease and desist and don't call us. I don't know. We'll figure that out after the show.
Should we be concerned?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So do you have another number, or is there something else you'd like to say about the production?
Well, he blamed the fact that he did not win in 1853 on one journalist who wrote a scathing story that he would not vote for him. So I wanted to include one of those songs.
All right. So this is and very contemporary, because it's a candidate attack on the media.
That's right. Oh, that's absolutely right.
Here's another song that we're working on that could very well show up in the final production of Millard with 3 exclamation points. All right, John, whenever you're ready.
If I vote, I will not vote for Fillmore. He was a bad vice president, a failure White House resident. I couldn't really wait for him just to go back to Buffalo. I want to fill less time with thoughts about Fillmore.
Oh, see what you're building here.
Yeah.
What you're building is really, you're building a story, and it's a story in music.
Yeah, and tickets are on sale now.
They are?
Yeah.
We haven't even finished the story. We haven't cast. We haven't done anything. Well, in the meantime, you might be able to see some of this if you come out and see us when we do stand-up on August 12th. The August 12th show is actually going to happen. I know that.
That is going to happen, yes.
And where's it going to be again?
It's going to be at Bell Cell Banquets in Aurora, between Naperville and Aurora on New York Avenue. Mike Toomey from WGN Morning and you and I. It'll be a lot of fun.
And it's a Nice Man production.
Yes.
So you can get your tickets at bellcellbanquets.com.
And
the Facebook page, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show.
Just click on the link.
Dave wanted you to do one more song from Millard if you have one. Are you out? If you're out, it's okay.
No, that's fine. Is that what you want?
I would, because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get tickets once it opens.
Yeah, it's that hot.
Okay, this is, what is this? I don't know the background on this one, other than the fact that I just wrote it.
Okay. All right. Is there a title?
Foreigner Jukebox Hero.
Oh, yeah. Jukebox Hero. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's see if this will even work. All right.
He had no idea which party he would choose. He didn't care what ticket. He just didn't want to lose. He started out as an anti-Masonic in 1832. Then the Know Nothing Party, Constitutional Union II. And the last elected president to hold the White House gig. To belong to the party they just call Whig. He only got into office with Zachary Taylor's death. When he tried to run again, voters said, so long, bye-bye, MF.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Imagine if we set it to music and put it on stage.
Yeah, I picture Vic Tayback doing that one.
Millard. 3 exclamation points. So good. The follow-up to Hamilton. So nice job, John.
Is it hard to rhyme?
August 12th at 7:30. Yeah, August 12th, 7:30, Bell Cell Banquet. All right, Dave, jump in here, and then Bill and Wendy coming up.
All right, here's a fact about most Chicagoland homes. Yes, even your home. You probably have that one room where it seems impossible to manage the temperature. It might be the room above the garage, the added patio room, even the nursery. This room's always too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter, and maintaining a comfortable temperature is a constant battle. The answer is not a window unit or a space heater. They consume too much energy, not to mention they're dangerous. The best solution is from a name you might not be familiar with. It's Mitsubishi Electric Cooling and Heating. Maybe you're thinking Mitsubishi Electric, isn't that a car? Nope. Mitsubishi Electric is America's number one selling brand of ductless heating and cooling solutions. Mitsubishi Electric offers the latest in green technology and efficiency with one of the best warranties in the business. Chicagoland is known for its older, drafty homes, so choosing Mitsubishi Electric is the perfect solution. Find a diamond-qualified contractor near you at MitsubishiElectricChicago.com. Mitsubishi Electric, making comfort personal.
And again, Bill and Wendy coming up. Any prizes that I forgot to take care of today? Anything at all? We're all good there. We're all caught up. You know, there are very specific rules for the American talk show host legends, and I don't want to violate any of them.
I don't think you ever have.
It's been a fun show today.
It's been a lot of fun.
A lot going on, man.
I just got my ducks. I got my ducks.
All right, and that's not code for anything.
My ducks are in order.
Final word before we go to Bill and Wendy to Sandberg.
Bona Beef dropped off some beef for us. So we have some beef and chips because of the Crosstown Classic. So,
oh, thank you, Bona Beef.
You can get original beef pack for $11.95 from July 25th to July 28th.
And a lot of people don't know this, but 90% of Donald Trump's brain is Italian beef. It's a true story. We don't make stuff
up. Well, then I'll
eat
it. I'd be a cannibal. Bona means good.
Bona does mean good. A minute before 10, back after this.